Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Hello, welcome to Catharsis. I'm Tiff Stevenson, full-time comedian, part-time, massively unqualified therapist. For this podcast only, don't be texting me, messaging me outside of the podcast saying, Tiff, help me with my problems. Just for this podcast. Every week I talk to a guest about small things that irritate them, pet peeves, gripes, maybe some old wounds that need healing. We'll also dive into a topical gripe. See if we can provide some insight and mainly some catharsis. You can sweat the small stuff with me. This week, I'm joined by comedian, ice skater and fashion icon, Darren Harriott.
I love that. Fashion icon. Yeah, come on.
You are. You're always wearing something I think is amazing. So before we get into your issues, I'm going to start with one of my gripes. I've currently got my period and I thought perhaps that I'd entered perimenopause. I don't know why I've got to have something happen to my body that sounds like a dish at Nando's. But I visited the gynecologist, and this is just like therapy. And he said, no, you're not in perimenopause. And actually, my period is getting closer together. It's actually now every 24 days instead of 28. So I'm getting more periods as I get older. I did not sign up for this. I'm getting 13 a year, which is a baker's dozen. It turns out I've still got it, Darren. And by it, I mean excruciating menstrual cramps.
Well, I mean, I'm the perfect guest for this. So glad. Oh, lots of opinions on it. Wait, so you are having more periods. Oh, gosh.
Yes, as you get older, because I'm in my 40s, I think they're supposed to, as you go through your 40s, sort of slow down once you move into sort of perimenopause. I don't know who this Perry is. She sounds like a bitch.
Yeah.
Basically, you get hot, you get cold, you get angry. I mean,
your mango and herb.
Your mango and herb menopause.
You get them all. Oh, wow. Is there nothing you can do about it? Or do you just have to ride it out?
Just periods. There's nothing you can do about it. Well, you can actually. Like, lots of women take the contraceptive pill to control their periods. So you can actually not have periods and take packets back to back, which is sometimes what people do on holiday. But really, no, I can't control it. It's just me, the moon, the tides. Well, in fact, not even anymore, because they're every 28 days. I've gone outside of nature into this 24-day cycle of hell. And I don't know. I don't know what to do about it, but I just wanted to get it out there. Also, I just like normalizing the chat around all of this kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of men in the podcasting world and they're probably not opening their podcast by talking about, you know, their menstrual cramps. So there we go.
We do open by talking about our dicks, though. So that to us is like the period for men and podcasts. They open immediately with dick talk. I mean, look at me. The first like proper thing I've said is mainly dick talk. Oh, no. Sorry, Tiff. I've done exactly the same thing.
Let's dive straight in. The first section of the podcast we call old grudges. So this is something from the past that you haven't been able to shake off, or you wish you'd handled differently, or you wish you'd maybe even got your revenge. So just air it for me, Darren.
I used to work as a security guard at a music venue, and my boss at the music venue was the worst person I've ever met in my entire life. She was so mean, so horrible. Just to give you an idea of how horrible she was, we weren't allowed to drink water on shifts. Yeah, doesn't matter what. Yeah, was it allowed? If you were standing and you had like a cup of water, you'd be told off. You'd be sent home. You couldn't sit down at all. Even if you were working the back shifts at night, she was so unbelievably mean. Oh, she sent people home if you had a radio and you didn't address her the way she wanted to be addressed on the radio. So if you said, copy that, you would have to say, I won't say her name, let's say her name's Michelle. You'd have to go, yes, Michelle, I understand, Michelle. Copy out. You had to keep saying her name. You couldn't just go, no, unfortunately, we don't know about that. You'd have to go, no, Michelle, we don't know about that, but we will do everything we can, Michelle. She was a complete control freak. And what really hurts me now is she has more power.
Oh, she gone up in the company? Has she risen through the ranks?
She's like an area manager now of a load of venues. And it was, she was the worst person. Even thinking about her now, I get the chills. She was just, she would walk past and everybody would get nervous. You know those bosses where somebody walks past and you all just get really nervous? And she just didn't care because she knew that when you're a security guard, for all of us, we were all on 0-hour contracts. Right. And the sad thing is that when you're on a 0-hour contract, sometimes you get into a job that is basically a full-time job, but it's 0-hour contract. So you go, okay, I'm going to work at this music venue for 45 hours a week. It's a 0-hour contract, but I've got full-time work. Great. And she would know that. And obviously you don't get healthcare or anything like that. But if you did one thing wrong, like didn't refer to her the way she wanted to be on the radio, had a drink of water on shift, she would sack you on the spot. And because it's a 0-hour contract, there's nothing you can do. There's no unfair dismissal. There's no writing a complaint. And she did that to so many guys. And they would go, this was my only job. And they just lose their job for just anything at all. She was so mean.
What's interesting here is that for a lot of people, power can corrupt. So she's someone who's got a little taste of power in her job and gone, oh, I can use that to feel better about myself or whatever it is. And so firstly, like, I'm already angry. I'm fully invested, Darren. I'm angry. I'm like, oh, I can feel the rage building up in my chest. First of all, when you're not allowed water, I was like, that's a human right. I think that contravenes any kind of employment law.
Yeah.
And so I know that you're in 0-hour contracts, so you don't have a contract, so you don't have rights there. But as an employee, you have a right to have access to water whenever you want or need it. I'm pretty sure. We could get into such trouble.
I mean, how about human rights? How about you just being a nice person?
Yes.
Just treating people like humans and let them have a drink of water on shift.
Yes, yeah. So that's the first thing. Second, this is the problem with a lot of the jobs that are on offer now or this kind of gig culture is that you have no right or no recourse because you don't have any claim to the job, even though that you are giving your time. And also working in security, it is an at-risk job.
Yeah, very at-risk, yeah.
So I feel like it's one of those jobs where you should absolutely be given an employment contract because you're being asked to like risk your personal safety, especially at a music venue, because you've got different security. You've got like security in a car park, you've got security, I don't know, in a shop, but security anywhere there are performances or music or live venue or anything like that, or a nightclub, you are at risk of violence in your job because people are drunk,
trying to
get in, getting annoyed, getting thrown out. And so, like, of all of the jobs you do, that I sort of feel like for anyone that works that job, there should be some level of protection there for you.
There really should be. I mean, the fights and all that aside, and you know, disputes with punters and all that, you know, dealing with issues. I mean, just a music gig, you know, on a weekly basis, we're dealing with like crowd surfers and people moshing, and the amount of times I'd do my backing, just trying to get somebody. That was another thing as well. If we were working in the pit area, say, so obviously you've got the stage, you've got the pit area where security are, then you've got the crowd. And if it's a rock gig, people are crowd surfing. We would hand water out to those people in that crowd.
But you're not allowed to drink it.
We weren't allowed to drink that water. If we wanted to drink that water, we would have to come out of the pit, go round, and it was almost like we were smoking or something. We weren't allowed to do it in front of the public in a boiling hot gig.
Wow. That's insane. So also, just if you were, I'm assuming this is in the Midlands. How long ago is this that you worked there? Like,
I would say I was there from 2012 to 2015.
Right. So like about 10 years ago, if you went to a gig in the Midlands and you were moshing, you might have been held up by Birmingham's own Darren Harriott. Little did you know that this famous comedian was soon to be famous comedian. You were crowd surfing on his, like, also, I think you have to care about people to work in security as well. Like the safety of people. So I often think that people misconstrue or misunderstand security as being something that is sort of anti people or anti fun, when a lot of the time it's about ensuring safety.
Yeah, like the first security shift I ever did, it was for the royal wedding. Remember the Kate and Will's one? That was my first ever shift. And I learned immediately that, oh no, it's just customer service 90% of the time. Because all I was doing was just giving people directions and that was it. And then as I got into venues, you realize it's all about just dealing with people. And how you talk to people is how you, you know, sort out any disputes or anything like that. But, you know, sometimes even with this boss, and we always believed she was a bit racist. Because she would always say, I don't like the look of these guys. And 9 times out of 10, they were like black.
Right.
And we were just, and we kind of knew that she was a bit racist, but it always kind of hurt us a bit because she would say, I don't like the look of them. They're not coming in. And then she would disappear. And then we're just left now with these guys who, you know, 9 times out of 10 were absolutely like not even drunk. They were just sober guys trying to have a good night. And we would then have to come up with some excuse as to why they couldn't come in, because we couldn't say, you're not allowed in because the boss says so. We couldn't say anything like that. We'd have to just make up something and go, normally it was too many lads. That's what we would have to say instead. We'd go, oh, there's too many lads in there, you know? And I remember one time it was like, I can't remember what the gig was. It was like, not the Spice Girls, but it was like a Spice Girls type group that was in there. Yeah. And these lads came in, these guys, and we were like, there's too many lads in there. they were like, I don't think there is, but I'm here to meet my girlfriend. And I was like, no, there's too many lads, unfortunately. Yeah, you can't come in.
Oh, that's awful, because you're having to reject based on someone else's opinion of... at a glance of whether or not someone should be allowed into a club. But what's interesting about this, I think, if I was looking at it from a therapeutic viewpoint, which is my job on this podcast, even though I'm not a therapist, is I would say how you handled her, or how you handled those like kind of personal interactions, those tricksy situations, probably taught you quite a lot about being a comic. Like, do you feel like you got a lot out of that job that you actually use in stand-up now?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Dealing with people, dealing with sort of confrontations, not physical confrontations, but, you know, just verbal ones, and then turning it funny and, you know, submerging somebody else's opinion into something else. I feel like a lot of the times on the door, we would do that because the last thing I ever wanted to do was ever have to put my hand on somebody or have somebody put their hand on me. That was the last thing I ever wanted to do because... I'm not into fighting people. I also don't want to lose my badge. That's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to lose my security badge, because if I lose my security badge, I wouldn't be able to do comedy the way that I did back then, because I had a 0-hour contract, could work whenever I wanted. So I would always try to use my voice and always try and make them laugh as much as I can. But I do have, speaking of therapy, my own way of getting back what it is. So they do comedy at that venue now that I used to work at. And my goal is to eventually play that venue. And I reckon she will be there, because she's the area manager of all those venues. And I reckon she will be there. So I know all I need to do, Tiff, is start being able to sell out a 4,000-seater venue.
Right, okay.
Once I can sell out a 4,000-seater venue, I'm going to go there and I want to make sure I do about 5 days. So she's got to be there for one of them. And I want to see her in there. And I'm telling you now, I will point her out and I will say her name on every one of those shows and say she's the meanest person I've ever met. I'm dying to do it. That's my way of getting back.
Well, after this podcast comes out, you'll be able to do that. You'll sell those tickets. But I love that, because that is, well, that's what comedy is. Comedy is puncturing tension through laughter. So how you do that, and if you use that to diffuse situations when you were on the door anyway, then you've just that's a direct transferal into your life as a stand-up comedian. Thank you for sharing that.
No worries.
Fingers crossed that Michelle, as we're calling her for this podcast, will be at this venue in Birmingham. Let's give you 12 months to hit the target. I like to give us hard targets for this. But it is a hometown gig, so you could definitely do one night, I reckon, with a year to sell it. Let's get Darren's old boss to the venue so he can sock it to her in a verbal fashion.
Come on. She'll switch the mic off.
Thank you for sharing that. Do you feel a bit better?
I do feel a lot better. Now that I've got out, I've never said that to anybody before about her. I've told friends and stuff, but I've never said the full thing that I do intend on going back and doing a gig there. And it feels so much better now that it's on
my chest. We've got a plan of action.
Come on.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Up next, it's time for your topical gripe. So that's something that's in the news, which is getting under your skin, irritating you. What have you been thinking about? What have you been chewing over?
Okay, I think this is topical, but it's a bit more broader than
subject.
What gets my nose up is that I don't know why everybody hates Elon Musk. Tiff, it blows my mind, all right? Listen, this guy... electric cars, wants to save the world, wants to put people on Mars, took over Twitter, is trying to take care of all the trolls and make Twitter work. Now, I might be what's known as an Elon Musk shill because I pay for Twitter and I don't mind paying for it. I think Elon Musk is a good person. He's doing his bit for the planet. He probably needs to stop having so many kids. That's probably going against doing good for the planet, having as many kids as he's got. But I do think he gets a lot of unjust hate.
Right. Okay. Well, I haven't paid for Twitter, but I am thinking about paying for Twitter because I cannot get my tweets seen for love nor money. And I'm like, is it just a waste of time being on here? I've got like 55,000 followers or something on there. And now I put stuff out and no one sees it. So he's backed me into a corner.
I don't even use Twitter at all. And I just paid for it because I felt like everybody was paying for it. And I did a gig in December and I said it on stage. I went, I actually paid for Twitter. And the entire room hated me.
Did you get booed?
I got booed. I went, boo! And I went, who in here else pays for Twitter? Silence. They all hated me. The gig went downhill. The last 7 minutes of the gig was tough. Because they were like, we like this guy, but why would he pay for Twitter? The one good thing about paying for Twitter Blue, is once you send out a tweet, you get 30 minutes to edit it, which is great for a guy like me, because I struggle with spelling. And every now and again, I'll send a tweet out, be sitting down, and I'll be like, how many S's are in business? and I'll go back to go check it. And then 9 times out of 10, I've made a mistake. But do you like Elon Musk?
I don't actively dislike Elon Musk as much as people do actively dislike Elon Musk. I think he's been a bit needy on there. Like, he was sort of ranting on about the culture wars. And I was like, oh, dip your knob in some yogurt, mate. That'll deal with your culture problem. The one thing that gets me is I think he sort of thinks he's very funny. He clearly thinks that he's a comic and funny. And that's the one thing, I suppose, when you've got all the money, what's the one thing that you sort of can't buy? And it's, you know, people's love. So I think the more that he tries to aim for that, the more repelling that can be as a force. You know, my friend came round to pick me up the other night in a Tesla. I think they're great cars. They're sexy cars. I'm into it, you know. And look, I will say this now, Darren, because I've mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast, but I'm not going to go and live on Mars because they've got three moons and that means triple the periods. I'm already having 13 a year. I cannot handle 39 periods a year. I will die. I'm not doing it. So I sometimes like his innovation, but sometimes his tweets read a bit like Adrian Mole's diary.
Yeah.
You know, like when he does stuff like calling the guys who were like trying to save the Thai boys for the, you know, the cave rescue, like there's stuff like that where you go, this is so childish. Like, why are you behaving like a 15-year-old boy that's just discovered the internet for the first time? Like, grow the fuck up. You're a CEO and a billionaire. Like, get your shit together.
Yeah, he definitely has the vibe of he wants to be popular, like, but he wants to be loved. Like, yes. He wants everyone to love him. And I know what you're saying, because sometimes on his Twitter, it does seem like if AI tried to write comedy,
yes,
the way he tries to put jokes and stuff. And I always think about Elon Musk, like, if I met him, he'd be such a tryhard to be, like, your friend and be cool. Like, if I was to fist bump him, he'd do the explosion at the end. Like, oh, you nerd. What are you doing, mate?
I had this old bit of stand-up that I am going to try and rework, but I back this as a theory, right? I think we need to get back to being mean to nerds. And this is why we don't want Elon to be popular, because we want our nerds creating cool shit and inventing stuff that we can try out with our friends. But if they've got friends and they're popular and they're happy, the need to innovate drops. So we need to leave the nerds isolated, alone, creating cool shit. Well, we don't want him to be too happy and popular, because then we're not going to get the next version of the car. We're not going to get to Mars.
That's a very good point. You want nerds to be sort of like jealous at other people, because they work harder when they've got a little bit revengeful in them. Like, yeah. I'll show you, football team.
Yeah.
You want that energy. Yeah, Elon Musk doesn't have that, does he, anymore? In fairness to him, he hasn't really done anything else. He brought Twitter. You've just made a solid point there, because since Elon took over Twitter, he's kind of just been all in with Twitter.
Yeah.
And that's about it. And, you know, he's a guy who could create, I don't know, some like flying boat or something.
Yeah, you're chasing popularity on that. Then you could be off somewhere doing something else. So, you know, so just be wary of being too nice to the nerds. I'm going to get so much shit for this, Darren. So much shit. Up next is a little section we like to call unpopular opinion. And I mean, your topical gripe could have been an unpopular opinion, but this is something that you love that everyone else hates, or vice versa.
Yeah, well, this is one that I hate. So I'm quite funny with food, so people say. I'm quite odd. One that really bugs me is I do not think croissants are breakfast food. At all. At all. I don't get it.
Mon coeur.
No, it's
How
not.
How dare you?
It's not at all. I don't understand it. Okay, can I just turn my gripe into hotel food?
Well, you can do both. Let's unpack croissant first. This is an unpopular opinion because France are going to come for you. The French are coming for you. So is it the chocolate that makes you think it's not a breakfast food? Is it the sweetness?
It's the sweetness. It's the pastry. It's the pastry. The chocolate is obviously not breakfast. We don't even need to get into that, Tiff, because it's chocolate. Chocolate is not a breakfast food at all. Pastry with the flake, no, it's too sweet. It's like a cake. You do not have cakes for breakfast. You have cakes after 12 p.m.
After 12. Okay, right. So, because you see, now, have you ever been to France?
I have not been to France. I know that I would be very annoyed.
So I did a French exchange when I was like 13 or 14, I think. And, oh God, this is going to link back in again. I don't know why this entire podcast has a theme running through it. But yes, I think I was 14 years old and I went for a month to Nantes in France. And for breakfast, we would get, I would go to French school, so we'd get up in the morning and we would have breakfast. And breakfast would either be a baguette with like Nutella on it and a bowl of hot chocolate, you know, chocolat chaud.
Chocolate, yeah.
Right. And a Nutella on bread or a pan au chocolat. And then we would go to school, and that was what would set you up for the day. You're starting the day with a little bit of chocolatey sugar drink and chocolate on bread. Chocolate and bread combination is what sort of exists. But I do remember that being a month of it being a bit grim, because the girl I was staying with, her mother, Sabine, her mum was an alcoholic, and she kept asking me if I'd started my period. This is why there's a theme with this podcast today. So she kept saying regular, which is French. Like, she kept asking me, and I'd be like, je ne comprends pas. Je reste ici. S'il vous plaît.
What an uncomfortable.
Je suis très mauvais. What a horrible, like, it's a discussion you barely want to have with your own parents, let alone someone's French alcoholic mother.
It's a discussion you'd struggle with by yourself, let alone with like an alcoholic person, and you're in a different country.
Yes. Oh. So we're saying cross. I disagree, because I think get the sugary treats out of the day. I follow this, you know, breakfast like a king. Lunch like a prince, dinner like a pauper. So I like to get my heavy duty, high sugar stuff out the way early doors. Are you a porridge person then?
I would have porridge, but I don't have sugar in porridge. I've had powdered peanut butter.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's much better. I'll have some sugar substitute, but I'll also have toast without butter and maybe an egg. But I also don't like wet food.
Wet food.
Yeah,
no,
like
moistness.
Beans, stuff like that. No, okay. Not for me.
So talk to me about breakfast. Did you say hotel breakfast there?
Yeah, hotel breakfast. Yeah. It's the croissants. They have these weird pastries. There's cakes. It's just not a breakfast. I don't understand why we need to have a whole table full of desserts for breakfast. It blows my mind, because I never eat sweet things until like after 12.
But I guess, you know, with a hotel breakfast, you have the option, don't you, of having some wet egg out of speaking of wet breakfast food. You've got the hot buffet as well. And then there's also yogurt and granola. You've got options. But if you start your day with a bit of stodge, that's a necessity, right?
I think my problem, Tiff, is I'm paying too much attention to everybody else's plates.
Oh, okay.
I sit there and I go, really? At 8 a.m, you're eating cookies? That's me in the hotel. I literally look at everybody else and I go, why would you do that? I think deep down, this is therapy. Deep down, there is a part of me that is jealous of it, because I know that if I have a cookie at 8 a.m, guess what? Darren's having cookies all day. The wagon is falling off. I have zero control. That's why I eat like a king for dinner, because then it's close to bed.
Right.
So it's not all day. So deep down, I guess my anger and annoyance at it is it's internal. It's at me, really, because I do not have that control at all.
So do you back this? They were bringing in a new... The government were talking about sort of, or government advice of saying, don't bring cake into the office.
I mean,
because if people have issues around food or certain types of food, then you're making it more difficult for people to not eat that.
I understand it from that point of view of making it makes it difficult for people who don't want to eat it. But, you know, I'm sure you've worked in an office. I've worked in an office. Those cake days are what you live for, man. live for a birthday or a cake. You don't care what it is. What is it? St. George's Day? Let's just get a cake. Bring a cake in. Any day of the week, you want a cake brought in.
I'll eat a flag. Give me a flag. I don't care. Yes. Anything to sort of break the monotony when you're in a boring office job. That you go kind of go, it's 5 minutes of not having to go back to your desk while you sing happy birthday and get a slice of some nice sponge.
You do it
not
with your
wet,
enemy,
though.
Your office enemy. You would happily go, happy birthday to Michelle. You would happily do it as long as you get some cake. Yeah.
Now we've unpacked it to see that it's actually your lack of self-control.
Zero control.
What else? What else if you started in the morning you would do all day?
Like, oh my gosh.
Computer games. Like if you got started in the morning, if you got up in the morning and before 12 went, I'm just going to have a quick go on this, would that be you for the day?
No, I have, it's purely food. That's it.
Ooh,
I am,
okay.
It's purely food. Like if I have, like for example, I am not a guy who eats leftover pizza in the morning. Can't do it.
Right.
It has to be finished on that day because if I eat pizza in the morning, I'm eating cake. It goes all day. It goes. I go off the rails. So I can't do it at all. Same with like fizzy drinks. I never drink fizzy drinks in the morning, which I don't think people should anyway. But if I do, it's fizzy. Yeah, fizzy drinks turns to pizza. It all goes downhill completely.
It's Matt. I like that it's just food though, because for me, I've got like a series of addictive behaviors. Mine would be like if I switched on a TV show. If I switch on TV early in the day, then the TV's on in the background. I find it very hard to then stop.
Yeah.
Or if I watch an episode of something, it's really hard for me to just watch one episode. I've got to go about five deep and then fall asleep while it's on.
Okay, yeah.
Like I can't disengage myself.
Especially because it says, you know, we'll play the next episode in 10 seconds. And you're like, okay, yeah, just keep it going while I'm here. It's hard, yeah. Because back in the day, it used to actually stop. Whereas now, they keep going.
Well, back in the day, they had this thing called a sense of anticipation, which you built up over time because it wasn't available to you. I do remember like waiting specifically to get copies, you know, at your local Blockbusters.
Yeah.
Like someone would have a copy of a film out and there would only be two or three. And you're like trying to find out which mate of yours has got like Rocky IV.
Yeah.
You know, like, So you could go around the house and go, give that back. I want to see it. You know, like I can't.
That's
like,
great. Yeah.
Waiting days to get like Terminator 2 or whatever on VHS, you know, because someone else has got it out. So, and that in a way, you know, we're kind of spoilt by life for all of its technological advantage. And I guess this, the heart of what you're talking about here comes to choice.
Yeah.
We are spoilt by choice. Choice can become, and I think this is known as a psychological phenomenon, that you can be overwhelmed by choice.
Yeah, oh, completely.
Human beings aren't designed to have this much choice in their lives. It's like when I walk into a supermarket, I just start freaking out.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, there's 17 of, I don't know which one of these washing up liquids I need. There's like 17 of them. And do they all wash the dishes? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I've got to that point where I just go by what colours I enjoy on the packaging. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? A blue washing up liquid, that'll look nice. I'll just get that. Yeah.
There's a name for the effect. I think it's the Gruen effect, which is where you, when you walk into a supermarket or something that is set up to purposefully disorientate you. And also that stuff shoved at the front that you didn't go in there for, that kind of end of point of sale marketing, it's all shoved on the end of an aisle.
Yeah.
And then you just gravitate towards it and pick it up because you've been, you know, it's when you end up picking up stuff in a shop that you didn't go in there for.
I'm sure they do that now with all the streaming sites, you know, like Netflix and whatnot. When you go on their app, it's everything. And it's designed in a way for you to see what's new, but keep scrolling and keep looking at all everything that's there. I get so lost on there.
Well, everything wants your time, you know, so all of those kind of apps or the TV shows, the longer you're on there, even on Instagram, when we post a thing, you're like, oh, you need to post more than one photo in a carousel so they stay on it for more than 1 second, because otherwise we're not going to send anyone to your page. And you're like,
yeah.
And that's what the Gruen transfer is. It's like designed to confuse you. There's a catchy display. So it's almost like the breakfast. You're seeing that. You're going in. You're going, oh, this is overwhelming. I can't have that because that's me for the day. But also, why have I got 27 different things for breakfast? Can I not just have three choices? Like in the 70s, you know, that there were three flavours of ice cream or whatever, you know, like, or colours. My friend Stuart used to say this. I was like, vanilla, chocolate, strawberry. That's it. You got it. You're covered. So now it's just like there's so much all the time that we're constantly on overload.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. I feel like that all the time now, though, with like everything. But I think everything is designed to be a bit like that. where you're just, it's just constant overload. Maybe, and it's right what you said about social media, maybe social media as well, because, you know, I'm sure you do endless scrolling and you go, what have I been doing for 10 minutes? I didn't learn anything. I got nothing out of this, but just scroll and, you know, get that dopamine hit every now and again.
Yeah, getting those hits of dopamine and then going, I could have gone outside for a walk. I just existed in the world. Why have I wasted my time? Well, thank you for sharing your unpopular opinion. I disagree about the croissants, but I think larger as a whole, we got to quite an interesting place with it. So thank you for sharing that. We're going to wrap up this week with an angry aunt. Occasionally, we get letters and emails in from listeners. So I like to get angry on their behalf. And this week, the letter says, "Dear Angry Aunts, I gave my friend my phone for research purposes and she leaked all of my WhatsApp messages to the press. Please get angry on my behalf. Little Matty, 44 and a quarter, Westminster." Fuck off, Matt. Fuck off, Matt Hancock. I will not get angry on your behalf. How dare you email this podcast and ask for help?
Can I jump in? I met Matt Hancock. I had a chat with him 3 weeks ago. I did Dancing on Ice and he was in the audience and I made a reference to him. He came up to me at the end. Look, I'm not proud of myself, but he was very nice. He was very charming. I was wearing a pair of these like gold pants for the show. And he went, "Oh, they're the same gold pants we wore on I'm a Celeb. You might be wearing my pants." And I was like, oh my God, I think I've shared pants with Matt Hancock. This is not how I saw my career go.
No, and also don't downgrade yourself from fashion icon as you're established at the beginning of the podcast. How dare Matt Hancock put that at risk? Here's the horrible thing about it. I did Peston once and I was on with Michael Gove.
Oh, wow.
He's got a kind of sort of slimy quality like about him, but yeah. He was also he was slimy and sweet.
Well, exactly.
He was very nice to me in person.
Matt Hancock was the same.
Because they're politicians. They know how to put spin on stuff. They're not going to be rude in a room, but then you kind of can't. So they know how to put the glaze or the veneer of like, I'm a decent person.
Yeah.
And then obviously the further we get away from the lockdowns and the pandemic and everything else, like the more obviously grotesque their behavior is, let alone his affair in the midst of all of it where he's just like groping someone at work.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing I wish you'd have said to him, well, we didn't know then, if I meet him, whatever he's doing, I'm just gonna say nobody thinks this is going well, Matt, which is in the WhatsApp messages he messaged going to George Osborne going, testing's going well. George Osborne replied, nobody thinks the testing is going well, Matt.
That's how deluded he is.
Deluded, but they're all laughing at us as well of like, how many have flown in today first class and gone into a premier in, like, ha, ha, ha.
I think they all kind of are hoping that time will be kind to them. Because I think right now, Hancock is still in the thick of it. Obviously, the text messages leaking, etc. We're still quite new out of the whole pandemic situation. And I think for him, he's expecting to, because he was, I'm telling you, for a guy who was who at that point, I mean, 3 weeks ago, one of the most hated men in the country. He was,
yes.
He was in the marquee with all of us and all the people, you know, audience, chatting with everybody, laughing, seemingly having a blast. There was no sense of, oh, I better hide in the corner and just be, you know, a bit of a shy wallflower. He was very much out there. That's what kind of took me by surprise, how sort of loud and, you know, up for a chat he was, considering everybody's got sort of wants to put a knife in his back.
I really sort of feel there's no sense of shame. There's absolutely no sense of shame. And the more and more is revealed, even when the affair was just revealed, I remember watching the TV and the BBC were reporting on it and they were like reporting on Matt Hancock and then they just gave a warning that the report contained flashing images and I was like, none of us deserve that. But I always thought like during the daily briefings, it was like health and safety with Gareth Keenan in The Office. You know, like he was doing those videos and he has the air of like a supply teacher whose car gets keyed up every day, and they're like, you know,
yeah.
And he tried to sort of rehabilitate himself, didn't he?
He did.
There is no sense of shame. He set up a TV production company. He's got an autobiography. And I think that's what makes me angry the most. For a moment of my catharsis on this podcast, I'm so fucking furious that this man is getting to make money and to continue to make money
yeah.
and stepping into our arena of entertainment. Get out. Get out.
On Dancing on Ice, there was a couple, two celebs who did a show with him, did a SAS, and he had that book coming out, and they all got text messages from him saying, oh, inviting them to his book launch. And they were like, I'm not going to... What, you think I'm going to Matt Hancock's book? One of them went, where did he get my number? They had no idea how he had their number, sent them invites to their book launch. And they were like, I mean, we spoke to him and he was a nice guy and everything, but I'm not going to his book launch. And it just shows that level of like, just no shame. Just doesn't care.
Shamelessness, shame-free. Yeah. Well, I don't even want to thank you, Matt, for sending that angry aunt in. Look, normally on this podcast, I will get angry on your behalf, but I'm just getting angry at Matt Hancock this week. So, but do tweet your problems and we will deal with them. If you send them to me on Twitter, @TiffStevenson, #angryaunt, send us a problem and we'll try and come up with a solution for it. Thank you for coming on the podcast today, Darren.
This has been great. Honestly, I had quite tense shoulders before we started and I feel quite relaxed now. I've got quite a lot off my chest.
I've done my job. I've done my job as an unpaid therapist with no qualifications. Just doing some emotional labour for fellow performers.
I'll tell you, Tiff, in 2023, us comedians, we can do anything. We can do anything we put our mind to these days.
We can. What have you got going on? What do you want to plug? Tell us about what you're coming up.
I'm on tour in September, but you can just find me on all the socials at Darren Harriott. That's the most important thing. Everything's on there.
Everything you want. Go see Darren on tour or catch Darren at any old ropes. He's doing a few coming up in the next little while. Yeah, go see him. Especially go to Birmingham if he books that 4,000 seat venue.
Come on! Let's do it.
Within 12 months. We want it within 12 months. Thank you for coming on the podcast. What have I got coming up? I'm on tour in May. All of the dates are on my website, which is finally been updated with the tour dates, not with any new pictures or anything else, but just tiffstevenson.co.uk. And the first one, 22nd of March, come along and see me in Belfast at the Imagine Festival of Comedy and Politics. So check that out. Thank you very much, Darren.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You can listen to other programs from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.